Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're heading south, way south, to a place most of us probably picture as, well, just ice. Antarctica, we think of it as this completely empty, frozen landscape, you know, untouched by all the usual human stuff, politics, ambition.
Right, and that exact perception, that's what we're really aiming to challenge today. We're diving into Klaus Dodds' work, The Antarctic, a very short introduction. It's a crucial book because Dodds argues pretty forcefully that this continent is anything but simple. It's actually one of the most complex, politically managed, and globally important places on the entire planet.
So our mission here is to show you that Antarctica isn't just this empty land. It's a dynamic human construct. It's a stage for geopolitics, a vital science lab, and honestly, the absolute front line for understanding climate change.
Exactly. It's this ultimate global commons, you could say. And its identity. It's always been shaped by us, our history, our ambitions, and crucially, our international deal making.
Okay, so let's start with our guide for this journey. Who exactly is Klaus Dodds? And, you know, what makes him the right person to unpack all this geography, history, and politics?
Well, Klaus Dodds is a professor of geopolitics at Royal Holloway, University of London. He's genuinely a world-leading authority on the polar regions. But what makes his take so unique, I think, is that he comes at it as a critical geopolitician.
A critical geopolitician. Okay, that sounds important. What does that critical perspective actually mean for how we should view Antarctica? How does it change things?
It means he looks beyond the surface. He analyzes how geographical places like Antarctica are deliberately filled, really, with political power. He's not just looking at, you know, who planted a flag where. He digs into the narratives. Think about the stories we tell, the heroic explorers, the pure scientific discovery. He shows how these stories are actually used. They become political tools to justify why a nation should be there, why it has influence.
Ah, so when he sees a research base, it's not just a lab doing experiments. It's also making a statement, like a subtle claim of presence, almost sovereignty.
Precisely. He forces you to ask why. Why do nations pour billions into these incredibly remote outposts? What message politically is that presence sending on the world stage? And his background is perfect for this. He combines serious academic work with practical experience. He's advised international bodies, done field work. He actually knows the diplomatic machinery from the inside.
That approach really sets the stage for the book's main idea, doesn't it? That Antarctica is just deeply tangled up with human history, our ambitions, our ideals, and makes you look past the, you know, the pristine ice and see the human activity, the struggle underneath.
Exactly. Dodds wants you, the reader, to dismantle that simplistic picture postcard image. He takes you on this fascinating intellectual journey, starting way back with abstract ideas, the imagination, really, and brings you right up to the messy, complex reality of today.
And the starting point is kind of wild. He points out that Antarctica was an idea for centuries before anyone even saw it. You mentioned philosophers like Aristotle, Ptolemy. They weren't exploring, they were thinking. They hypothesized this southern continent, Terra Australis Incognita. They basically thought it had to exist just for global symmetry, for balance.
Yeah, it was a philosophical need, almost. And that idea, that need for balance, it drove exploration for centuries. And what Dodds really highlights are the paradoxes that define the continent even now. It's the most international place, managed by treaty, yet it's also, arguably, one of the most contested spaces on Earth. Underlying tensions are always there.
And here's where it gets really relevant for everyone listening. Mm-hmm. It's managed as this incredibly pristine place, strict environmental rules. Mm-hmm. But it's under fundamental threat from global forces we create elsewhere, mm-hmm. mainly climate change, the fate of Antarctic ice. It has huge direct implications for coastal cities everywhere, yours, mine, everyone's.
So let's trace that journey. Dodds lays out, how did this abstract idea become such a political hotspot? Like you said, for ages, it was just this undefined shape on maps, Terra Australis Incognita, fueling this desire to finally find it.
And that desire just exploded in the heroic age, right? Scott, Amundsen, Shackleton, names we all know. We usually hear these stories as pure adventure tales, but Dodds puts this critical filter on them. He argues these expeditions were more like, well, carefully staged performances of nationalism and also masculinity. The famous race to the pole wasn't just geography. It was a clash of national pride, imperial muscle flexing.
That's a really powerful way to reframe it. They weren't just testing human endurance. They were projecting their nation's strength onto the ice.
Yeah, and I found his analysis of Scott's expedition, the tragic failure, really insightful. Scott lost the race to Amazon, obviously. But Dodds points out how that story of noble sacrifice, of dying gallantly, was skillfully shaped back in Britain. That narrative ended up cementing the UK's emotional and therefore political connection to Antarctica, maybe more effectively in the long run than getting there first.
Absolutely. The sort of cultural construction paved the way for the political one, especially after World War II. The massive turning point, the real game changer, was the International Geophysical Year, the IGY,
yeah,
in 1957-58.
The IGY. Okay. Why was that so important? It sounds like just a big science fair.
Yeah.
But you're saying it totally reshaped the politics.
It was revolutionary because it basically forced countries to cooperate scientifically before the territorial arguments could really blow up. It established science as the main legitimate reason, the currency, for being there. Forget just planting flags. Now you had to bring, you know, scientific instruments. And this actually allowed fierce Cold War rivals, the U.S. and the Soviet Union, to work together, share data, set up bases. It laid the entire foundation for the political fix that came next.
Ah, okay. So science created this kind of neutral ground that diplomacy desperately needed, which leads us straight to the Antarctic Treaty System, the ATS, signed in 1959. People often call it a miracle of Cold War diplomacy. What was the actual trick? How did they make it work when tensions were so high?
The absolute genius of the ATS, its core success, was freezing the territorial claims. Instead of fighting over who owned what, which could have easily led to conflict, they just agreed to pause the argument indefinitely. No new claims allowed. Existing claims weren't denied, but they weren't officially recognized either. It just put the whole issue on ice, literally. And that created space for peace, for prioritizing science, and importantly, for demilitarization. It's really a remarkable piece of 20th century governance.
That is brilliant diplomacy. Don't solve the unsolvable problem, just suspend it. Create room for peace. But okay, a system designed back in 1959. Surely it's feeling the strain today. Where are those 21st century pressures starting to crack the ice, so to speak?
They're definitely showing up, especially around resources, even if mining on the continent itself is banned. The Madrid Protocol in 91 put a stop to mining, for now. But the debates around resources persist, particularly in the southern ocean surrounding Antarctica. Dodds really focuses on krill fishing. Krill, these tiny shrimp-like creatures, they're the absolute cornerstone of the Antarctic food web. Everything eats them. But there's growing commercial interest, krill oil supplements, fish farm feed, and that level of fishing seriously threatens the entire ecosystem.
Wow, yeah. Take out the base of the food chain. That's catastrophic for whales, penguins, seals, everything. And beyond fishing, there's this other complex issue emerging, right? This idea of bioprospecting.
It's a real legal tangle. Scientists have discovered these amazing microorganisms, extremophiles, that can survive in unbelievably cold, harsh conditions. Their unique genetic makeup could be revolutionary for medicine, for biotech. But the Antarctic Treaty, well, it wasn't designed for this. It doesn't clearly say who owns that genetic material. So imagine a scientist from, say, Chile, working at a British base, discovers a valuable gene. Who owns it? The scientist. Chile. The UK? Or should it be a shared global resource? The treaty is silent.
Yeah, that's a huge question of ownership on a continent with no single government. But Dodds argues there's one threat overshadowing all these legal and commercial fights, the climate frontline. He calls it the most urgent existential threat.
And crucially, Antarctica isn't just a passive victim of climate change. It's an active driver of global climate systems. Dodds breaks down the science, the melting of the huge West Antarctic ice sheet, particularly the Thwaites Glacier. You might have heard it called the Doomsday Glacier. If that glacier destabilizes and goes, we are looking at potentially catastrophic global sea level rise, enough to fundamentally reshape coastlines and human civilization.
So the health of this one remote continent literally dictates the future for billions of peoples. Mind-boggling. Yeah. This whole synthesis, the science, the history, the power plays, it leads us to the core messages Dodds really wants us to grasp.
Yeah, the first big theme has to be the geopolitics of ice, his central point. Nothing, absolutely nothing in Antarctica is apolitical. Every research station isn't just a lab, it's also a statement. It's a marker of national presence, of influence within the treaty system.
Which makes you question, doesn't it? Why is that country spending millions to maintain a tiny outpost thousands of miles from home? It's never just about pure science. It's always, at some level, about projecting influence, maintaining a seat at the table. But the second theme offers a bit more hope, maybe. This shift from nationalism to scientific internationalism.
Absolutely. That shift demonstrates that humanity can change its priorities. The continent went from being a stage for national rivalry, you know, flag planting, to becoming a platform for global cooperation, sharing vital environmental data. That trajectory, that historical shift, it offers a model. It suggests global priorities can be reshaped when we face shared, serious challenges.
And the final theme you mentioned is the paradox of pristine wilderness. Dodds basically bursts that bubble, right? The idea that Antarctica is truly untouched virgin territory. He says that's a myth.
It is. It's maintained as pristine only through incredibly intensive human management, constant political negotiation, and those complex international agreements we talked about. The wilderness itself is, in a way, a human construct. It shows that even the most remote places on Earth are completely intertwined with our systems, our choices, our governance.
The book is just packed with these really potent ideas that they definitely stick with you. Maybe we can touch on a few of those key summary arguments, the real takeaway lines.
Sure. One that really captures the tension is Antarctica is the most international of continents, yet it remains one of the most contested spaces on Earth. That push and pull is constant.
And what about science's power? Science in Antarctica is never just science. It is also the currency of geopolitics. Your scientific contribution is your ticket to influence, your voice in the ATS.
Yeah. And linking to climate, which we discussed, he puts it so powerfully. Antarctica serves as both the canary in the coal mine and the engine room of global climate change. It warns us and it drives the system.
And finally, that big question mark hanging over everything. The question is whether this 20th century solution, the Antarctic Treaty, can withstand 21st century pressures like climate change and a global scramble for resources. Can it hold?
That's the cliffhanger, really. That's the challenge. But understanding all this, how it works, it actually has some pretty direct real-life applications for you, for the listener.
Definitely. For one, I think it gives you much better critical media literacy.
Yeah.
Next time you see one of those stunning nature documentaries about Antarctica, amazing shots of icebergs, penguins, the book teaches you to ask, okay, what's not in the frame? What political stuff? What human infrastructure is the camera avoiding? Who funded this film cruise ship? What's their country's agenda down there?
That's a great point. And secondly, the Antarctic Treaty system itself, it's a powerful living example of successful international cooperation. The ATS shows how nations can manage a shared space, a global commons, for the common good. They found a way to pause conflict to pursue shared goals. And those mechanisms, those ideas, they're directly relevant for thinking about how we govern other shared domains, like outer space or the high seas or even cyberspace.
And the third thing for me is how it makes climate action feel more tangible. Knowing that specific research on, say, the Foyce Glacier directly connects to future sea levels in your country, your city, it shifts climate change from being this vague, abstract threat into something urgent, specific, and linked to real places and real scientific work.
For me, the biggest personal takeaway was just the sheer cleverness of the Antarctic Treaty negotiators back in the 50s. It really is a masterclass in diplomatic creativity. They saw that trying to solve the ownership problem was impossible. It would just lead to conflict. So they chose to suspend it instead. And that created the stability needed for peace and science. It's a profound lesson in managing really difficult global issues.
And maybe the final thought for you listening is this. Walk away with a totally new picture of that continent at the bottom of the world. Antarctica isn't remote and irrelevant. It's actually a mirror. It reflects back at us humanity's best qualities, our capacity for incredible cooperation, our scientific genius, and also our worst, our rivalries, our resource grabs, our impact on the planet. Its future isn't guaranteed at all. It's really a test case for whether we collectively can manage immense global challenges together, especially as climate change and resource competition heat up.
It truly is the ultimate global commons. And its fate, well, it's completely tied up with our own.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.